5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another hour of Tech Talk. I am Stephen Scott. Good to have you back here on the show. This week it's a special one for you because we don't have Robin, we don't have Tim, we don't have Andy with us, but we do have the team at Technology for Life at RNIB, which I'm so pleased you guys could be here with me this week. I've got Madeline Mann, I've got Mohammed Atif, I've got Ben Rendell and Joe Fullerton from the team. Hi, guys!
Hello!
Hi, Stephen!
Hi, Stephen!
Oh, good to have you here. We need to do this more than once, I tell you. This is such fun. We're going to have so many interesting topics to talk about this week, because what we're going to focus in on are those questions that have been asked by customers who've been getting in touch with RNIB Helpline. Those kind of common questions, we're bringing them all together here this hour and really giving people a chance to, get a sense of what other people are asking, but also give the answers to those questions as well, which I think is really important. So we're really focusing in on those common questions that are being asked to the RNIB helpline. We will, of course, be giving out the RNIB helpline number, and we'll be giving out all the information to get in touch with the guys at Technology for Life team here at RNIB. We'll give you those through the course of the hour and at the end as well if you want to take notes of those. But before we get into the questions that people have been asking, I'm going to put one to you four. And that is, what has been your top tech highlight of 2020? That wasn't easy for me to say. I want to put that out there. What has been your top tech highlight of 2020? I know there's not an actual highlight of 2020 because it's been a terrible year. But let's focus on the tech side of it. Madeline Mann, I'm going to start with you. What's been your highlight?
I think my highlight is my new iPhone 12 that I just received about a week ago. Yeah, I was a bit late to the show this time. But I think it's iPhones are always a highlight. So this new iPhone, I like holding a new phone. I like setting it up. And actually the smooth transition from my old iPhone to the new iPhone. And it's so easy to just hold them next to each other and it's doing their thing. And the only thing you just have to do is set up your face recognition and a few cards for your wallet and off you go. And you can just use it again. So one lunchtime is just enough for me to set it up and also get some lunch in between. So I think this is nice to see how easy it's become to just get to your latest phone you want to use and not to need any help to set it up independently and voiceover talks to you no problems at any stage of the setup.
Yeah, I must admit, I do love a new phone. I love that thing. And Apple did an advert over the course of the year where they had a moment where, you know, someone's opening the box and the box kind of slides out and you get a and it pops out and you're like, my new phone is born! You just spend the rest of your time being really happy. Okay, good shout, Madeline. I'm all for that. Mohammed Atif, what about you? You been buying iPhones?
I haven't bought an iPhone this year, but what I am excited about is the new and improved accessibility tools built into Windows 10. Do you know, before, say even 10 years ago, where we used to buy a computer for about $500 and spend a grand on assistive technology. Mm. That's no longer a requirement because everything is already there, ready to use. You've got magnifier, which increases the font size and the image on the screen. You can increase and decrease it as you please. You've got narrator, which is more or less very, very close to the screen readers that are out there already that you can purchase. That's a game changer as well. So there's no additional downloads. There's no additional licenses. It's straight away, take a laptop or a desktop out of the box, connect it up, use it straight away. Even the setup process of Windows 10, you can get speech on that sort of process as well. Just like the iPhone, how you can sort of turn on VoiceOver or turn on Zoom on an iPhone, you can go through the setup process. You can even do that in Windows now, which is empowering and brings so much more independence to people.
Yeah, and Narrator has improved so much in 2020. 2019 as well, but certainly 2020 was the year when Narrator became more of a functional screen reader and less just the screen reader that you used to download JAWS or NVDA. It's now a standalone thing that, you know, you can use and it has use now, which I think is great. No, that's a really good one. Okay, Ben Rendell, what's been yours? What's your tech highlight?
So I was trying to think of something that isn't Apple related.
Good luck with that.
It does leap back to Apple. I mean, I haven't bought a new iPhone, but I did buy an Apple Watch Series 5 at the beginning of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And I think for me, it has been a highlight because obviously during lockdown, trying to do exercise and keeping a track of that and, you know, keeping in touch with things, it really has helped. And I was on a Series 2 before, so it was a nice jump for me because I was like, oh, I'm not going for a 3 because that's not a big enough jump. But I also got the one with the cellular capability, so I can leave my phone if I want to and take my calls on that. And yeah, it's really good. Also bought AirPods Pro as well, so it's been a nice Apple year.
You buy a lot of fruit purchases, a bit like myself, Ben.
That's it.
It's been known. Joe Fullerton is with us as well. What's your tech highlight, Joe?
Well, the biggest highlight for me was mastering the use of Zoom meetings with my family and guiding my mother, who is now 80 but was 79 at the time, guiding her through the process with a view to being able to celebrate her 80th birthday together with our family all online. So we had regular weekly Zoom quizzes, and the first few meetings, you know, it was a bit hard for her to get used to using her iPad with Zoom. But with a bit of practice, she got very, very comfortable with it. And by the time of her birthday, sort of 6 weeks later, she was really at ease using Zoom, and we were able to celebrate together, which was lovely. There was about 20 of us together on Zoom on the day. And then through work, we use Teams, and we've developed our Lunch and Learn seminars for volunteers on Teams. So I felt that the two programs, Zoom and Teams, you know, they're very similar. I confess I'm not an expert on using them with screen reader because I'm sighted, but I've experimented a little bit with the iPad and VoiceOver, and I did find it very easy to move from option to option in the Teams app on iPad. So I'm getting there, and I know that my colleagues here today will be able to talk more about using screen reader with Zoom and so on.
Well,
so I'm looking forward to that.
I mean, so it's interesting you bring that up, because that is actually one of the first topics that comes up in our list of top questions that have been asked to RNIB Helpline over 2020. Madeline, give us the question, because you chose this one, and this is essentially one of those questions which I think has affected all of us, irrespective of sight loss, but especially for those of us who are blind or partially sighted, trying to get to grips with this video conferencing software.
Yes, I mean, one of the things that hit hardest was that socially, it just affected us so much more not to be able to see or hear family members, colleagues, but also other organizations that we normally deal with. So there was this big hole of what to do. I mean, Zoom was around before, or other platforms. Did we use them for video conferencing? I mean, talking just about me, I think I've been in Zoom once before the lockdown, just to try out whether it's accessible or it isn't. And I definitely wasn't willing to spend money to have a membership or something. Now it is very much the way how organizations are able to keep in touch with its members. People have Zoom meetings with family members. Like Joe just explained, just celebrating a birthday. I mean, I got married this year. So we had
congratulations.
Zoom. Thank you very much. So we had Zoom and kind of chats just to keep in touch with people who sadly couldn't come just to see us in person. And that's just a huge change for blind and partially sighted people that haven't used platforms before. I speak to people that are 80, 90 years old, barely know the gestures on a touchscreen device, but they're using Zoom. And that for me is a sheer miracle. So we're talking about February, March, and they wouldn't know what device to choose. And when you happen to speak to them now, they go, oh yeah, I have my weekly choir practice in Zoom and stitching or kind of a skills club or whatever they do. And everything is on Zoom. And you think, wow, it's so nice to see the change. These apps are usually quite easy to use. on your smart devices, and to talk people through the change of, you know, through using them, and to see how it kind of brings a little bit of, can we call it normality, to talk to people over video conferencing with other people. But yeah, a bit of regular sort of meetings into their lives is for me a really big thing of 2020.
Okay. Ben, Mohammed, jump in here, because and Joe as well, because I want to ask this question to all of you. You know, when it comes to the calls you get and the people who contact you, are you advising on using, say, a smartphone to use something like Zoom? Or, you know, are people saying, well, I want to use my PC? You know, what's the easiest way, do you think, to kind of get into this and use it successfully?
I think it really depends on the, you know, customers' circumstances. I think for a lot of our customers, they tend to find that accessing it via a smartphone is the easiest, but it depends on the technology that they're already comfortable with. So if they're set up with an iPhone, for example, not many of them also use a desktop or anything like that. They tend to sort of use one or the other. So yeah, usually via a smartphone, that's mostly the calls we've dealt with. How do I, you know, set up the Zoom app? How do I put in the meeting ID, the password, things like that?
Mohammed, do you have a view on that?
I would agree with Ben, actually. It depends on what people are already using. If they're familiar with NVDA or JAWS and they're familiar with using desktop apps, then there's no reason to change anything that's already in place. So you can go through, as Ben said, you know, meeting IDs and passwords and all that kind of stuff. Invariably, though, the smartphone or tablet option is probably the best for most people, because they can then move from place to place, especially if they're doing video chatting, where they can sort of show people different parts of their home and all that kind of stuff. With a laptop or a desktop, that's a bit more difficult, of course. So a tablet or a smartphone would be most appropriate.
Joe, do you want to add anything?
Yes, I would agree with Ben and Mohammed that it's user preference, and using the apps on the tablets and phones is slightly easier, just simpler. It's simpler getting in and out, really, isn't it? Because, you know, when you log in, you can just open the app and it launches straight away, that kind of thing. But otherwise, there's quite a lot of similarity between the app on Windows and the app on smartphone or tablet. So for us, in giving support, it's relatively straightforward to, you know, to offer support on both types of platform. So yeah, it's really about finding out what the user would prefer to do. So we always ask a few questions to start with to find out what they're wanting to do, what they've got already, and how they prefer to work. Because some people have both, you know. So then we'll take a bit more time to work out their true preference. Or they might want to even learn both. So, but I agree, most people are using the app.
Is there anything you would avoid or advise against using when it comes to video conferencing? I mean, would you say that maybe the PC is just a bit too much, you know, stick to the smartphones? I mean, I know it does depend on the user, because someone could come to you and say, well, look, I'm a Windows user, I use JAWS, I know how all that works. You know, I just want to use Zoom, I want to use Teams, whatever. And then you'll have someone who'll say, well, all I use are tablets and all the rest. Would you say one's better than the other in that sense?
I wouldn't say that one is better. I think, you know, especially when it comes to things like video, obviously, your phone or your tablet tends to have a built-in camera, whereas if you're using a PC or a laptop, it might not have that capability. And to be able to set that up can, in some cases, be quite complex. So, you know, a tablet or a smartphone is just a simple setup. You know, you don't have to connect a camera or anything like that.
Well, you bring up another point there, which is when we all have this problem, no matter who we are, whether we're sighted or not, the nostril shot, which seems to be the new thing, where everyone's camera is sort of pointing up their nose. And, you know, for blind people who don't have any ability to know where the camera's pointing, you know, what do you give people advice on that? Does that come up? Is that a question?
It's a question that's come to me. I don't know about the rest of the team, but I tend to, you know, say to people, bring it as close to your face as you can. So if you know where the camera is, you know, put that, you know, put your center of the face, you know, on the camera, probably not quite, and then just move backwards. And then you want to be you know, sort of, I don't know, not an arm's length, but probably, you know, hand to elbow, that sort of distance, depending on the camera. But that's my advice. I don't know about anyone else.
I think on laptops, it's quite easy because we have the camera on the top of the screen. So when you unfold the laptop and you have it quite even, like on a higher table than a lounge table, it quite nicely works out to do video calls. It's probably one reason why I always work in my kitchen, because it's easier to do it that way than, you know, using a smaller desk or anything. So that's quite a bit of good advice, because it's working out well without balancing your laptop a bit higher or lower.
Yes, Madeline, I would agree with you there. I was just quickly checking my video and I found that if I just push my screen ever so slightly back so that it's not 90 degrees to the keyboard, just slightly further back than 90. So I'm pushing it away from myself slightly to get my face sort of in the middle. And then the other thing is to have reasonably good lighting. So sometimes when I've been doing a Teams or Zoom call in the evening and the light's starting to fade, I need to switch on a lamp next to me in order for people to be able to see me properly. And as you mentioned, Madeline, the kitchen's quite a good place to be because it's nice and bright, isn't it? You usually have good lighting in your kitchen.
Yeah.
But it can be a bit too bright sometimes. I think a good idea is when you're in a meeting is to just ask people if they can see you and if the lighting is okay, just in case they don't think to prompt you. You could always ask at the beginning of the meeting, can everyone see me? And, you know, is it clear, in case you need to turn the light on?
I was not really confident asking. I'm totally blind. I was not really confident asking questions like that before lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say, it didn't take me long, and it was fine for me to just say once or twice, can you see me okay? That's especially important if you have meetings with people you wouldn't meet every day,
but there is
and you want to make sure.
There's a social aspect, though, as well with this that comes with it, that you have to have the camera on. And I wonder if it's okay, or if you guys think it's okay to say, do you know what, I don't want the camera on, I can't see you.
I think that's okay.
I think that is okay. And there's a very legitimate reason for asking for your camera to be off, which you can hide behind if you wish. So the obvious reason is to save your bandwidth or save, you know, to improve your connection.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn your video off. So if you've got a bad hair day or a day when you really, which I have quite often, thanks to all the running that I do, I come back with my hair like a bird's nest. And you know, if you're just having a day where you don't feel like smiling at people, or, you know, having to brush your hair, or maybe in my case, I might want to eat a snack and not be watched. I've got a bit of a phobia about being watched if I'm the only one eating. So you can turn your video off and maybe your microphone as well, so people don't hear you munching. But there's lots of tricks you can use. You can always say to people, I'm turning my video off because my connection's not very good. So there you go. There's a nice, easy way to hide
the fact
that you don't.
I just tend to have mine off by default and then leave it up to people. If they mention it, I'll say something. Yeah. And if they don't, then just leave it.
I think the difficulty arises when people are using magnification and need to get close to the screen, for example. And that's when the nostril shots happen, or you see the top of their head or whatever. And that's when the difficulty happens, when they're trying to get detail from the screen. If you're sat back in a chair, for example, like, for example, myself, Madeline and Ben, we don't have that much sight anyway, so it doesn't matter what's on the screen, to be fair. So you can sit back and, you know, just look straight ahead and you'll be centered in the camera. But if you're using magnification and detail is quite important to you and you need to get close to the screen, that's when the difficulty arises, I think.
Yeah, Mohammed, I do that quite a lot. I'm sighted, as I mentioned, but, you know, I've got aging eyes and I put my glasses on, but I still find that I want to peer at the screen sometimes. So, you know, people probably see my head bobbing up and down. So I think we all do it a bit. And I think that we've all become quite relaxed as well about appearing online. The more you do it, the more relaxed you feel, I think. So,
and it depends as well. Sorry. And it depends also, Joe, on the situation as well. Like, we do lunch and learn. For volunteers, and for example, if you're doing a meeting like that and you're a presenter, I think to have that personal touch, it would be good to have your camera on. Like, if the presenter hasn't got the camera on and you can't see the presenter, for example, it's sort of I believe, defeats the object of the exercise a little bit.
I also want to bring up what is now being used as a phrase. I didn't know this until recently, but there's a phrase called elephant in the Zoom, which I quite like. And
brilliant.
Yeah, I love this.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's good, though.
And the thing that, for me, the elephant in the Zoom often, for me, is my screen reader. Which I've got to, you know, first off, I always encourage people to put an earpiece in because, you know, I sometimes forget. And what's irritating is when I don't, because I don't always want to wear headphones or always want to wear an earpiece. I'm working at home. I've got a room, which I'm very fortunate to have, that is separate so I can close the door and I can just go off and do my thing. But of course, the problem is when you have the no headphones in and you're just listening through speakers or through the laptop itself, you will get your voice from your screen reader speaking out into the room, and that's a challenge as well, isn't it? So it does mean we're more likely that we're going to have to wear those earpieces, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is when you're in a presentation and there's someone who's unmuted and they're sat there like with a packet of crisps and you can hear the rustle, it's very irritating.
I just want to ask one more question on this before we move to the next topic that you've brought up, Mohammed. Actually, it's your one we're going to move to next. But just to ask one more question on this, because I wonder about this. Oftentimes, there's so many conventions and conferences and events happen now online as a result of coronavirus, which a lot of people have said, well, it's a shame, you know, that we're not meeting each other as much. But I also wonder if perhaps in some ways there's less exclusion for people. People who might never have gone to events or done things or, you know, taken part in a class because it would involve them going somewhere that maybe they couldn't get to. Is it perhaps for blind people in particular a benefit that this has happened?
For me, I think, that's one of the great things I take out of 2020. Not that I didn't go to places, but I can hear from speaking to people that they said I had difficulties organizing transport or whatever, and now I can join meetings. And things like that is something that I remember, you know. And if it's not just meetings, it's also filling out conversation. I know this is slightly off topic, but filling out forms and information where people used to send letters, and it was very irritating. And now everything is online, or the majority of it is online. And I think for us as a blind person, this is a bit of a benefit in 2020.
I don't think also people used to do quizzes and competitions and stuff like that as much as they do now online as well, because you get all these local groups and stuff like that doing, you know, we'll have a music quiz or a sports quiz or something like that, you know, join our Zoom meeting to contribute or take part or whatever. I don't think that used to happen as much as it does now, to be fair.
No, I don't think it did either. Although I do think now it's kind of getting a bit too much. Like, yep. It's definitely a benefit. I agree with that. But I think maybe next year is when we'll see things balance out a little bit more, so that the sort of that mix. So yes, you can go to a face-to-face event, but there is also an online option. I think that'll be the time that it'll get a bit nicer.
I like the fact that the spoken word has become so valuable during this time of lockdown. So speaking to each other, whether it's via Zoom or Teams or on the phone, we seem to all value that more now than we used to. I feel it's slightly redressed the balance away from constantly texting and messaging each other in favour of having more time where we're listening and speaking to each other. You know, to have that sort of physical contact, well, you know what I mean? virtual physical contact. Non-visual, socially distanced.
Social distance.
Don't
contact.
Touch me, yes. Okay, let's actually, you know, this is interesting because you said spoken word, and that's twice you've done this, Joe. You're brilliant at linking. You should get a job on the radio. Mohammed is bringing up the topic that has come up from a lot of people, a lot of questions from people around reading services this year. A big change to reading services this year, Mohammed, and lots of blind people getting in touch with RNIB Helpline and Technology for Life team to ask about support and how to access this.
Yes, absolutely. In February this year, reading services was introduced. It replaced the old Overdrive service, where you could download audiobook titles onto a smartphone, tablet or PC and listen to them at your own leisure. It's not a substitute or replacement for the Talking Book service that we have at the moment. That's still active, people do get books on CDs as a DAISY format or on USB memory stick. But this is convenient because the sign-up process is like signing up for any other process. So if you want to sign up for an Amazon account or a Facebook account or an Instagram, it's just as simple as that. You add your email address as your username, password, complete all the information that's required, like name, address, contact details, check some preferences, you know, communication preferences and all that kind of stuff, and you're ready to go, basically. And if you visit readingservices.rnib.org.uk, you can download titles, you can search for titles, you can search by category, and you can download them directly onto your PC as a zip file. And you can, once unzipped, you can either transfer that onto a USB stick or a memory card for use in a DAISY player or a memory stick player. And also now Dolphin, in partnership with Dolphin, RNIB and Dolphin have developed an app called Easy Reader, where you can install this on any Android or iOS device and enjoy your audiobooks directly on your phone or tablet. So you sign up for a Dolphin account. You can do that with either a Gmail account or create a new Dolphin account. Locate the reading services service within the app, and you can, again, conduct a search by categories, browse by the latest additions to the reading services and the RNIB the catalog, and you can download them directly onto your device using the readings using the Easy Reader app and enjoy them at your leisure. The great thing is that there's no returns period. So even if you did download the book today and didn't get you around to listening to it until probably next week, you can keep that forever, basically. And you can listen to it at your pleasure. That's particularly useful, for example, if you have finished a book and it's Saturday night, for example, and you know RNIB aren't going to be open between Saturday night and Sunday morning. So you can't then request a new book and nobody's going to see it until Monday morning anyway. But if you go onto your app or go into the website, you can download the book. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes from start to finish. You can transfer it or listen to it on whatever device you need straight away.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful service. But I do have to ask, do you think that it's helped by the fact that Dolphin came up with Easy Reader? Because that is the platform that you guys are encouraging all of us to download and use. You know, RNIB hasn't gone out and created its own app. And some might argue that's a good thing, because what we've done is we've said, look, we're not going to reinvent the wheel here. Here's a thing that really works. Let's use it. So I guess my question is, has Dolphin Easy Reader helped us along a great deal?
I think it has, definitely. And I mean, we wanted to build on the skills people already had. So people were already using or able to use Overdrive through the Easy Reader app. Some people were using the Overdrive app, but quite a few people were using Overdrive within Easy Reader. And so now it's relatively straightforward for people to use reading services through Easy Reader in the same way. And RNIB has helped make some improvements to the Easy Reader app. So there's been feedback, you know, we've given a lot of feedback to Dolphin to help them improve the app. So for example, it used to search all the books and throw up both DAISY Audio and the EPUB books. And the EPUB books are useful for people who are studying and who want to see the exact text of a book, because the EPUB books have the text which can be read aloud using the Easy Reader voice. But if you just want leisure reading with a human recorded voice, then you just want DAISY Audio. So we've now fed back to Dolphin and they've added a search all feature, which is a bit confusing because actually the default is search for DAISY only. So now when you load the new version of Easy Reader and you search for a book, it will only give you the DAISY audio books, i.e. our proper talking books. But if you change it to search all in the app, it will then throw up both the DAISY books and the EPUB books. So this is an improvement for people because it's making it easier for them to search for the type of book that they want.
I think that the thing is, you know, what I get from all the feedback that comes into the show here is that, you know, there's a real desire for this to work. And a lot of people have sent in their praise, their criticism, all of that, of Dolphin Reading Services, the new RNIB Reading Services website. But of course, this is always in development, isn't it? And that's an important thing. And I know you guys can't speak to that side of it, and I wouldn't expect you to. But I think it's important for people to realize that this is an ongoing process, and feedback is really important. And the feedback you get as well, guys, that goes to the team that create this website, that make this happen, that work with Dolphin, doesn't it?
Yeah, feedback is absolutely crucial, because you can't expect a service to improve if you don't tell the service where it needs to improve. Because we know some things, you know, we use it ourselves, but we don't necessarily use it in the same way you use it. So that feedback is really important. We always pass the feedback on. You know, we don't just say, oh, we'll take it as feedback and do nothing with it. It always gets passed on, and it gets put on a list, which gets reviewed, I believe, every week. So, you know, there is always room for improvement there. And I think we've been quite unfortunate in a way that reading services launched at the time of lockdown, pretty much, which didn't really help the situation, because some of the things that were wrong with it didn't get as fixed as quickly as we would have liked them to be. But, you know, it is still a work in progress.
And of course, one issue that we had when it launched, people couldn't support people to sign up for reading services who needed just that little bit of help to sign up or to get their device ready to use reading services at home, because it took a bit longer for them to have their CDs posted to them, you know. So I think we had a few challenges which we mastered all along the way. So, yeah.
Fortunately, we were able to extend Overdrive for a little bit longer than we were originally hoping to. So we extended that for 2 extra months, which gave people a bigger transition period.
But yes, no, we can now say goodbye to that, can't we? That's gone. It's never coming back, is it?
Yeah.
Good.
But it's been a success overall, because we now have 9,000 readers on the new reading service platform, where we had fewer than 5,000 before on Overdrive.
I think that's an interesting point, though, Joe, because you said the people who had used Overdrive had kind of got the skills already there for to therefore move on and use Dolphin Easy Reader, and that's really important, actually. And people probably don't think about it in those terms, but that's a really important point of perspective on that. You know, the service is a huge success, clearly, and it's just getting better all the time. There's even rumours of I can't say her name because there's 1,000 of them here, but Lady A, possibly a skill coming through to Lady A soon. I'm not breaking any secrets, I don't think, or, you know.
No, it is coming.
Yeah.
I believe it'll be next year, we're hoping, at some point.
Can't wait for that. I think that's going to make such a difference to reading services. Oh, it will. Really will. Look, I want to stay on that topic because, Ben, you picked up on books in particular in your question that you wanted to raise, that's been one of those most important questions that have been coming through, most common questions coming through, and that's around the Orbit Reader, the Braille display, and RNIB Library, I guess, in that as well.
Yeah, exactly. So with the launch of reading services, that's enabled us to give a catalogue of electronic Braille books which can be downloaded to the Orbit Reader. So you would go onto your computer, sign in to reading services, and search for a book, and you can tell it you just want the Braille titles, and it will show you the Braille titles that are available that you can then download, put on your Orbit Reader via the SD card, and then read them in Braille, which is brilliant, really, especially if you want to keep up those literacy skills. I mean, I know there's a whole debate about Braille and blind people and literacy and things, but if you are able to do it and you want to do it, then it's a great option, because you can have, you know, thousands of Braille books on the Orbit Reader, literally thousands. And if you imagine carrying that around, I mean, you'd need probably a 7-ton van or bigger probably to do it. You know, I mean, I was doing a presentation recently and talking about Braille and the Orbit Reader, and I showed a bank statement. Obviously, I didn't show them the full one. You know, don't want them to know how rich I am. But yeah, if only.
Yeah, but, or not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not after being to the Apple shop.
No, it's all gone to them. Yeah.
You know, showing them a printed bank statement, which is, you know, a little white envelope essentially, and then showing them the Braille version with this big massive booklet, which has about 20 pages, and that, even that small comparison is, it just shows you, but being able to, you know, even put, you know, Harry Potter onto a Orbit reader, say, I mean, that came in what, 3-4 volumes, some of them in Braille. So quite a lot. So it has improved. We also now sell the Orbit Reader 20 Plus, which also has features like a calendar in there, an alarm clock. So you can even manage a diary and get it to remind you of things if you so wish. And there is also now the Orbit Reader 40 if you want a bit of a bigger display, but we don't sell that.
Well, not yet. It is coming, isn't it? Along with the Orbit Writer, which is the one I'm quite keen on, although that's more for use with a phone, really, with a smartphone.
It's for input, yeah. It's essentially the 6 Perkins-style keys. I don't know if we can really say that anymore, because, I mean, there are still people who use Perkins machines, but we'll just call it that, because that's what people are familiar with. And, yes, that's it. You just get those keys and... bit like connecting a Bluetooth keyboard.
It's interesting when it comes to Braille, isn't it, guys? Because, you know, Braille is a bit... it seems to me it's in the same place at the moment where books were when e-books came along. People would say, well, you know... and I don't mean necessarily blind people saying this. I mean, I think this is more wider view on it, that Braille is on paper, which is why a lot of people, I think, see it as old-fashioned. They see it as old because they think of Braille as something on paper, a physical thing that you would have in a book form or whatever. And that's still the case in some cases, but most people now who use Braille are moving over to these e-devices, the Orbit Reader being the most notable and certainly one of the cheapest ones out there. So, you know, we're really seeing a move towards electronic Braille, which is brilliant for blind people. And, you know, guys, I'm guessing you all get questions about the Orbit Reader from time to time. What kind of questions come up? What do people ask? Is it curiosity? Is it training that's the big thing? Is it buying one that's the challenge?
Well, if buying one is a challenge, then RNIB had earlier on this year the grant that we gave to reading service members to get an Orbit so that people were able to get one that wanted to buy one. We also have the grant service for technology grants, where people are able to apply for a grant for an Orbit reader if they wish. So hopefully, if people want to buy an Orbit reader, we can support them to achieve that. We get questions about, the common things. How do I move into folders, out of folders? How do I put my media onto the SD card? And then how do I need to work it so that they are all appearing on my Orbit reader? A common one is probably how does the Orbit reader transcribe things? Is there a transcription program in the Orbit reader? From these sort of questions to very complicated, it froze, can I take the battery out? And if so, can I then put it back in? And how do I do that? Which is a challenge to explain to blind and partially sighted people to do that. Not everybody has the same skills of taking batteries out. And
does this point, though, to a problem when it comes to, because I think this is a bigger issue, actually, not just with the Orbit Reader, but with other products that are specialist technologies for blind people, that access to information about those products, you know, those kind of specific user case issues, those user issues that come up, there isn't a huge amount out there. You can't go and Google, you know, what's the command on JAWS to do this, that, or the next thing, because you probably won't get the response. I mean, if I put anything into Google around JAWS, I get the movie. That's all I ever get. I get things about the movie. I never get anything about screen readers. So, you know, that's a problem, isn't it? That there isn't a huge amount of resource out there, which I guess is why you guys are you know, so important in this field.
Well, Stephen, I think it's a mixed bag, actually, and that's where the problem comes in, because, you know, often when you do Google something specific, like, for example, using JAWS and Teams, you get a pleasant surprise and you find that Freedom Scientific have already posted useful information about how to use Teams with JAWS with lists of shortcuts. So there's an example where there was a really good outcome on doing a Google search, but I totally accept that sometimes or regularly when you do a Google search, you draw a blank. And I find that, you know, it's a bit hit and miss, but it is always worth trying a search, an online search, to see if somebody has posted in a user forum. And it's similar for NVDA. And also going to the parent website is often very rewarding. People don't always realize that they can go to Freedom Scientific for JAWS, the NVDA NV Access website for NVDA, and similar things for Amazon, Humanware for their Daisy players and their Braille products. You know, if you go to the parent website, you can often find all sorts of useful frequently asked questions, documentation and troubleshooting guides. But equally, we gather up this sort of information and squirrel it away and can provide it for customers. So that's why we're here, to provide an advice and support line, because, you know, we appreciate that it's hard work Googling information, especially if you don't have easy access to online and you haven't got to that stage in your in your skills. So we're here to do that for you and bridge that gap and help you track things down. And also, we'll go direct to the organizations, not always ourselves directly, but we'll pass on information to our teams who liaise with Amazon and so on, and we'll try and get things clarified, or, you know, get a response from a manufacturer. Even Apple, you know, the big organizations, we can sometimes get a response where the customer is struggling.
I think it also depends on who the actual manufacturer or the supplier are of equipment as well. Like you said about, you know, NVDA, their resource is fantastic. You can get, you know, keyboard shortcuts and different navigation gestures and stuff like that as well. You said about Humanware and Sight and Sound and all those kind of places, you know, they're fantastic. And, you know, because usually when you do a Google search for something, if it is related to their products, then it will be, you get taken directly to their websites. And linking into the resources that we provide as well, Joe, I was going to say about our fact sheets as well. We have a range of fact sheets on our website. So if you go to rnib.org.uk/technology, you can download fact sheets and user guides and all that kind of stuff as well. So that's available.
There's a whole host of things on there, you know, about what is screen readers, screen magnification, even what is Instagram. Is on there, so it just shows you there's a
Ben, no one's using Instagram when you're blind. What's the point in that?
well Stephen,
oh, you're gonna school me, are you?
Well,
we did design a lot of fact sheets to try and demystify some of these topics. So we've got one on online prescriptions and one on Facebook, etc. So we've tried to explain some of the jargon, make it simpler for people who are coming to these things new, because we realize that not everybody's comfortable dealing with technology. And that's one of the things we always have at the forefront of our minds. No matter how geeky we are as individuals, we try and remember that not everybody feels the same way. And it takes people a while to get their confidence up. So we're trying to cater for people from all different backgrounds, all different age groups, and, you know, treat each person as an individual when they call us up and try and help them on their journey in using technology.
And Jo's done it again. She's that's a hat trick, is it not? Because it leads us perfectly into the final question, one of the most common questions asked to RNIB helpline staff or Technology for Life team staff here, and that is about simple to use mobile phones. Jo, you got a lot of calls about these.
Yes, that's one of my favourite topics. It seems to come up all the time, and I'm so relieved that we have actually got some simple to use phones that we can suggest to people. The two phones I'm going to mention, we don't sell them in our RNIB shop, and they're called the Blind Shell Classic and the Minivision. And these are button phones, sometimes known as candy bar phones, because they're like an old Nokia, traditional Nokia, sort of small brick that you hold in your hand. And these two phones have got screen readers built into them from the beginning, designed to be on by default. So unlike an iPhone or Android phone, when you turn it on, you don't need to go into the accessibility settings. The phone is already running with the screen reader, and that's how you're expected to use it principally. It's aimed at people who need to use a screen reader. And both of these phones have got a slightly large print display, so you can make the print slightly bigger. So they have designed the phones to be easy to use if you're partially sighted, but you would need a reasonable level of sight to be able to use the display. It's not the holy grail of a really large print display. There isn't really such a thing on the market, so you'd need to look at a smartphone if you want a really large display. So it's the closest we've got to a fully accessible, simple to use phone. And of these two models, there seems to be a bit of a leaning towards the Blindshell Classic in terms of ease of use.
I tried the Blindshell Classic this year, and I've got to say, I think it's a great phone. I think if I was taking a phone now, I kind of wish this phone was out about 10, 15 years ago, to be honest. This is the phone I'd been looking for a long time, before iPhones came along, and even probably in the first few years, because, of course, let's remember that the iPhone, the original iPhone, didn't have any accessibility features in it. So, you know, VoiceOver came later. A lot of people forget that. So, you know, it came along later, and, you know, in that intervening period when we were all sitting there thinking as blind people, oh, great, a sheet of glass with no response from it whatsoever. This is going to be great. I can't wait for the future. And then we realized that there was a future when accessibility came along, which is great. As you said earlier, Joe, for us geeks, this is great. Madeline loves a new iPhone 12. What did you go
now,
for?
Now, but I hated iPhone 12.
Well, exactly, yeah, you hated it. What did you go for in the end? Did you go for a Mini, a Pro? What did you go for, I meant to ask?
A Pro.
Of course.
Not like me, Stephen. I went for the 2020 budget version.
Oh, the SE. Oh, that's a great phone.
Yeah,
no, that's a lovely phone.
I'm very pleased with it. And what's been really great is that I've had so many customers this year ring me up saying they want to get a phone. They do want to get a smartphone. And often Apple does seem like a slightly simpler choice for people. You've got good apps for the iPhone. So I often mention to people that I've got one of these 2020 edition SEs, and that, you know, it's about £400. So it's affordable. And it's been really great. And Madeline, like yourself, I was really impressed how easy it was to transition from my old iPhone to my new one. It was very seamless and quick. So Apple really have got that process running a lot more smoothly now.
And, but of course, the problem is that not everyone wants one of these, and that's the problem, isn't it? And this is where it comes back to these simple-to-use mobile phones. I have a question on this, though. And this is I'll get in trouble for saying this, but, you know, I get in trouble for saying most things, so I'll just go for it. Isn't it time, since it's 2020, or nearly 21, isn't it time that we start encouraging people to start using touchscreen phones? Considering the fact that that's where everything's going, isn't it time that people just get on board with this stuff?
I want to think it is. And when I speak to people, I think a lot of us in the team, this is what makes our team so unique. We all do this. We all talk sometimes about ourselves and how we felt when these touchscreen phones came out first, and we all felt a bit overwhelmed with using a touchscreen. We all were there. We all have been there. We've done it. And I think I might want to say yes, it's time. But then again, there might be people that just can't fathom a touchscreen phone. And I think it's really important that there is a solution out for them.
But that's down to training, and it's down to fear. Let's be honest. It's all driven by fear. Because it's a whole other experience. It's something totally new. And yet, if you know, and I remember going, I used to do these technology classes. We used to do a thing, if you remember, back with R&IB, the looking forward groups. And I don't know if that was a Scottish thing or whether that was across the UK, but I know in Scotland I did a couple. And I used to go along to these things. And what we'd do is we'd set out a laptop, we'd set out an iPad, and we'd set out something else. And we'd say, right, by the end of today, we want you to be doing whatever, right? Maybe open up an app, or, you know, try and get on the internet, or open up Skype and make a call. And everybody in these sessions, bar none, would avoid the laptop completely and go to the iPad. Because they thought, well, that just seems a bit easier because you touch it and something happens. And, you know, the kind of instant reaction was, I know I need to touch this thing to do something. Oh, look, that worked. And, oh, look, there's a button. If it all goes wrong, I can just press that button and I'm back to where I started. There was a simplicity to it. And I just think if that's the case for a lot of people, and I'm not talking young people here, I'm talking older people who, you know, just didn't think they were interested in this stuff.
But bear in mind, physical disabilities as well of some of the people that we work with and talk to, that simply makes it impossible for them to use a touchscreen. So I think, yes, you definitely have more, you get more out of using a touchscreen device these days. But we need to accept that there are certain people that refuse.
But it's
not
about,
just a fear.
Yeah, exactly. But it's about choice. As you said, Madeline, you know, I had a great quote from a customer yesterday, and she said to me, I'm 96. I've done a lot in my life, but I don't want to learn anything new now. I just want it to work. I want to make phone calls, and that's it.
Usually when a person says something like this to me, and it's about communication, not so much telephone calls, then I talk to them about the Amazon Echo or the Google Home, you know, any smart speaker, so that they just reduce the isolation a little bit at home. And
but I think the point is that, you know, some people get to a point in their life where they don't want to learn anything new. They've used a button phone before, say, and they want to continue using that. We get a lot of people who used to use the auto phones, they're comfortable with that. You know, they've had these auto phones for years, and now a lot of them seem to be breaking this year. It seems to be the year for them all to break.
I mean, I get what you're saying. Yes. I know there are always people who will always say, I'm never going to use it in this. And, you know, you can't, nobody should be forced into doing anything they don't want to do. If it's not for you, it's not for you. And the point is, and this is the key point, there are alternatives out there. And I think the Blind Show Classic is a brilliant example of that, because it is a very simple to use device. But what is nice about it is it's not just a phone, it's actually what you would call a feature phone, isn't it? It's got things in it. I mean, you can watch YouTube videos on it, you can email on it. Yeah, you can do
Can I come in on that? Is that all right?
Yeah.
So the customer I was speaking to this morning, first of all, her support worker from the local organization rang me and said that she had spoken to the customer about smart speakers. However, she thought that the customer didn't really want to use a smartphone. So I feel that you can't really get the best out of your own smart speaker unless you are prepared to manage it with a smartphone or tablet. I know you can set it up with a laptop. I know relatives can do it for you. It's not really possible for a volunteer to do it for you. So, you know, you're limiting your options if you have a smart speaker and don't have a smartphone or tablet to manage it with. So I was bearing that in mind when I then rang the customer, having been asked to do so. And the customer made it pretty clear from early on that although she was interested in smart speaker technology, she really just wanted to be able to make a phone call using her voice, as you can with Alexa. Ooh, mentioned the A word.
Oh, that's it.
But
it'll all be set
I've
off
turned
now.
Mine off. I've unplugged mine. So anyway, she was open to the idea, the concept, but really what she wanted to do was just make phone calls using her voice. So the Blind Shell Classic fits that brief because it does allow you to make phone calls using your voice. As you said, Stephen, it's a simple phone, but it's got features. It's actually got a lot of features, which you don't have to use them all if you don't want to. I reckon they can even be turned off to make the phone simpler. But or you can buy the light version that has fewer features and save a bit of money. But the Blind Shell does have that ability to make phone calls to people in your contacts list. So I explained that to the customer and she was really happy. And she was in her 80s or 90s. She wanted to be able to press buttons and get a simple response from the phone. I think the beauty of pressing a key, it's like when you press a letter on a keyboard, you get the letter that you've chosen. You don't really... I mean, okay, you can make a typo, but, you know, you've got that physical confidence of knowing where the keys are and knowing what response you're going to get. With a touchscreen, you don't always have that absolute confidence because it's always possible for something else to happen that you weren't expecting. And if you've got the agility, you know, the presence of mind to be able to cope with things going slightly wonky, a smartphone doesn't faze you. But if you haven't developed that ability because of lack of experience and perhaps because it's harder for you to learn new things as you get older, or you might have short-term memory issues and so on, being able to push buttons on a phone is wonderful. But I also like the fact that you can use modern technology like voice control to operate the Blind Shell. So like you said, Stephen, it fits that brief of being both modern and traditional.
And also people just like some people just like to hold on to something, you know, like for example, they want the dimple on the five, for example, so they know where they are. Like on a flat screen phone, for example, there's no there's nothing to indicate where you are on the screen unless your screen reader tells you. Like, for example, when I first got my iPhone, I thought I'd made the biggest mistake of my life because it was just a flat pane of glass, really, and there's nothing to hold on to. There's no indication where I am on the screen or anything like that at all. With a touch screen, with a button phone, sorry, you know, you've got up, down, left, right arrow keys, and you can feel them and easily distinguishable. You know, I mentioned the number five and with a little dimple. You know, you're in the center of the phone when you hit the number five sort of thing. So I think that's very, very important to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, as much as I go on about loving my iPhone and loving the touchscreen and I'm in love and all that stuff, well, actually, the reality is I'm also in love with my Victor Reader Stream because, you know, every button I press, I know what it is. You know, I know what that button does. You know, I do still like those buttons. And it's funny because since my sight got worse, that's when I started benefiting and enjoying that technology more.
And let's face it, you save battery.
Yeah, well, that's
right. You save
right,
battery and, some people like to separate it, a book reading device and a communication device, isn't it?
Now, look, you guys offer so much support and advice, and I want people to be able to access that from you. You mentioned fact sheets as well. Who's going to take the lead then on telling us all about how you can get in touch? Who wants to do it?
You want me to do it?
Go on then, Ben. So how do people get in touch with you guys, and also how do they access all this information you have on offer?
So to contact us, our helpline, technology helpline, is open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can call us by via the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. You can also email us tfl@rnib.org.uk. Don't email us about your Oyster card because we can't do that.
We have not that TFL,
no. No, exactly. And to get the facts and guides as well as information about the grants we've mentioned, if you go to our website, rnib.org.uk/technology.
Brilliant. Guys, this has been a great hour. I can't believe it. It's gone by so quickly. We must do this again sometime. And I think as well, it would be great if our listeners, who I know will be intrigued by all of this, will want to ask you questions as well. Would you all be willing to come back and answer some of our listeners' questions next time?
Please,
Yes, definitely.
Okay, we'll get on that.
Madeline
Mann, Mohammed Atif, Ben Rendell, Joe Fullerton from Technology for Life team, thank you guys so much for being with me this week.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for inviting us.
And, of course, if you want to get in touch with us here, you can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you again next time here on Tech Talk.